This is the third interview with Sarah Rosner on May 1st, 1973, May Day. When I arrived, Sarah was writing some thoughts about May Day, and in the course of the interview and prior to it, we briefly discussed May Day. The interview begins with a discussion of Dorothy Jacobs, who married Blanca. And throughout the interview, although there's a great deal of jumping around, Sarah does talk about her relationship to the Union, her attitudes towards the direction that they began to take, and her own feelings of the direction they should take. The interview basically focuses on the period 1910 to 1918, although, as mentioned, there is some jumping around and some references to events when she was business agent. It was during the period after 1910 that she really started going to lectures, etc. But it was not until after the general strike in 1915 that she really became very class conscious and more involved in unionism. She describes at length her finally joining the Socialist Party in the mid to late 1920s, about 1927 to 1928. It was after the 1915 strike that greater involvement in unionism occurred. She describes the various fights of the women, her role as chairlady in the Hart chapter in Mark's shop, the difficulty she had as a result of her attitudes towards the war, and finally talks about the formation of the women's local in 1920. Interspersed throughout is discussion of her attitudes towards the Union, the treatment of women, and her own independence.
And then I found, in reading through the advance about Dorothy Jacobs, then I found where she got married, and then she sent an announcement in saying, because of illness, she was resigning from the General Executive Board.
That's not true. Well, you know, I know better. See, the thing is that he was put on the General Executive Board. He took over. They were both on. She was she had a very good mind. I used to look up to her. Look, I didn't worship anybody. I admired people. I admired them for their knowledge, for their honesty, for their sincerity. But to worship anybody, I didn't worship. Now, she was married, and when I was in school, when I was in Brookwood, I must find those papers. And I know that I have them. See? She did some very good organization work. She succeeded in organizing a plan. I don't remember where it was. But when it came to recognition, she didn't get the recognition. And I was very much put out. And I was at school at the time. I was in Brooklyn at the time. And I went to her home. And she was taking care of her husband. He was a sick one, and she died. The irony of it.
How old was she when you were at Brookwood? How much older was she than you?
Well, she wasn't, I would say about 7, 8 years, maybe less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would say that she was about, between that. And my sister, Dorothy, I said, why should we put up with this thing? Now, look, you've done all the work. Your name is no worse. You didn't do anything. All right, you get honorable mention. That's about all. But when it came a little honor, such as presenting not the Constitution, what do you call them?
No, resolutions?
Not the resolutions. Whatever they give a new local.
Oh, the charter.
The charter. Who gives something? They give it to men. I mean, that's how trade is. So I wrote up the thing, and I showed it there. She said, they must take this, they must take that. So I sent it into advance anyway. He sent me back, he said, if you permit me to editorialize it and take out this nigger. And he was a very intelligent man, I forget. Offhand,
was that Bird?
Who?
Bird?
No, that was later. Bird was before that. Bird was at least 17. This was in 24, really. Oh. So that time I was still groping. It's for a long time I had no comprehension about the union, about the labor movement. I was entirely ignorant of those things. You see, I was raised the Thielen and the Mauser, and I want you to know that also because I was a girl, and because of the poverty in the house, I didn't get even a Jewish education. I picked it up when my father taught the students. That's how I picked up my Jewish, the little that I know. The fact is that I never learned to speak proper Jewish or write properly Jewish. I had to learn because I corresponded with him. Later on, I'll show you. I've got his time. He was a learned religious Jew. So they turned me down with that. But I kept on protesting on the women and protesting on workers' education. I wanted these two things to become part of our, because it was, considering if you read the first book, it was the most progressive union.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it. I still don't want, as I call it, my union to be blackened in any sense. I'll blacken an individual leader, you see. But the union as a whole, I know that I could swear by anything that is dear to me, that Frank Rosenblum, Hillman, I didn't agree with everything. They were on the up and up. And then there's Sam Levine. I mean, they had their faults, but as far as honesty is concerned, as a whole. But the underdogs, you see, when it came down, that was horrid. It was most disgusting, and I've got that down. I've got that down.
See, sir, you know, I think it's important.
The first constitution of the mother aim was to take over the union, to take over the industry. Now, in 1920, that was when I started the woman's local business. Now, Bessie Hillman, I was on the picket line. I'll show you letters pertaining to those things. I says, Bessie, what happened to you? She says, you know, Sarah, she was a Litvachka. And she was honest, they're not the conditions. She said, that time, she says, we had nothing to lose. And so I thought to myself, raise me. What? But personally, I hadn't changed. As I told Hillman once in the bank, when it came a question between Howard, the progressive miners, foot Moose, you know about it? You know about it? I said to Hillman, I said, what is this? Let us, 2 years ago, we supported Howard. You compared him to our break with the United Garment Workers. Where are we? A picture frame, you take one in, you put the other. He said, people can see. And I stuck to what they taught me. They were my teachers. they were my teachers, and I told them so. When it came down to it, well, go ahead, ask me first.
Okay, that's what I want to start with, in fact, Sarah, is where, because you told me that with the 1910 strike is when you first became class conscious.
I became class conscious in 1915.
Oh.
Really.
Now, before 1915, though, you were already going to meetings and
yes, things? I was going. 1910, they gave me an introduction. I told you that I went with my mother, and she said, she said, you're not going to go to work. And my father explained to me what a strike meant. I didn't know what a strike meant. All I remember talking about the 1st of May as a child in Europe, that the workers used to sing the Rouge, but I didn't know what it meant. It had no meaning to me. You see, our house was the Yeshiva Buchers and some rich children that had special training from my father, a rich woman that took lessons from my mother, and us. We didn't have nothing. As I say, the fact is, we had to go. We had compulsory schooling, even religious school. We had, and it was fortunate that my mother was pretty well known, and the teacher, the religious teacher, Spitznain. I remember the names. I mean, it's so many years. I would have flunked because I didn't follow it through the way they presented it to me. All I knew that Sayadechem, I'd wash my hands and I'd bench, and Krishna laid, and I knew that all by heart. From word to mouth, not by reading or by being taught. I stole it while the kids were being taught. That's how I got it. So in 1910, I got a smattering of it. That's where I got my introduction to unionism. In fact, I didn't know. I thought when I told you about the finishes and omnibus that I pulled out, I'll make myself a little store. I didn't have the brains to take him down to the headquarters. Well, I had no comprehension of it, no understanding at all. So it took me to 1915 to really become class conscious. Mm. Really become class conscious.
Now, what kind of lectures were you going to then after 1910? What kind of talks and lectures were you going to up till 1915?
I went to the Sunday lectures to the socialist meeting, anarchist meeting, Emma Goldman's meeting, all the radical meetings, the IWW meeting. I went later on. So I got a smattering on. I didn't join the Socialist Party until 19. Let's see, that was way after I came back from Brooklyn, and that was how funny.
Mm.
I worked for the Socialist Party. I collected money for them. In fact, that one day I came home and I made a donation, a few pennies. My mother reprimanded me. I said, "Mom, I'm not going to give you an envelope, no more, because I have certain rights." I demanded that. But I did distribute leaflets, you know, things like that, for the Socialist Party. But to join them, I was no joiner. I wasn't an easy joiner.
But so your basic belief became that of the Socialist Party.
How did I join the Socialists? I became not anti-Jewish, but because of the religion that was inculcated in me, it had a reverse reaction. I wasn't supposed to comb my hair and pick up a broom. Extreme, extreme. Dancing, I never danced, you see. I never learned to dance because of that. Although the others did dance, but they danced with girls, you know. And then I was immediately shouldered the responsibility of earning a livelihood. So then, I was invited to speak at the University of Chicago on the same platform with Professor Agnes. I think I told you that. There was a regional conference of school teachers, if ever there was a damn crowd. That time already I realized what it was all about.
When was that?
This was in 1927 or 1928. When Professor Douglas spoke, and I went to convention with Professor Douglas, I used him, the room was local, as teaching the class. When I got, after all, with the little knowledge that I acquired at Brookwood, what did it amount to? Frank Rosenblum told me when I went there, he said, don't get too polished, have a good time, you know. And to me, I figured I've got 2 years, I'm certainly I'm going to make use of it. The fact is, I used to put out the sign, keep hell out of here, I'm not home. I didn't want to be bothered because it was a labor college and people did take advantage of it. Whereas I tried to utilize it a bit. So, but I went back to work instead of trying to get a job as an organizer. I wanted to go back to the shop. So I was invited to speak there. I got up from the machine. I think I told you the story, didn't I?
Yeah.
I didn't want to, you know, repetition makes clear, but too much of it is no good. So, Professor Douglas gets through, and I was called upon. I says, ladies and gentlemen, how can I follow a man like Professor Douglas? I just got up from the machine. Ladies and gentlemen, I says, no, I'm just kidding you. I want to assure you that if it wouldn't be for me, sitting at the machine, Professor Douglas couldn't stand before you either because I'm making his clothes. So I captured the idea. But when I sat down with the teachers and started talking, like I say, you need some minutes, get going. I got sick to my stomach. So, but I don't remember names, you see. Like it or not, unless I write things down, I don't remember names. I don't remember your name unless I look at them. I'll remember your face, your smile. I met two gentlemen, young. They were about 24, 25 years of age. And they started to talk to me. They were impressed with what I had to say at the meeting. And they belonged to the Socialist Party. And the year before, the socialists that I met were all Jews. And they spoke with such an accent. I don't know. Whether I'm narrow-minded in this respect. But when I wanted to hear a good speaker, I wanted to hear a speaker. I wanted to hear an opera. I wanted to listen to an artist. I wanted to see a good picture. I went to the Art Institute to see something worthwhile. not knowing what it is. But there were people that would explain it. Anyways, they inspired me, and I joined the Socialist Party. That's when I joined the Socialist Party.
But all of these years, almost 15 years before that,
yeah.
You really considered yourself a socialist.
Yes, I did, but I didn't join.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the anarchist meeting. I went to all their meetings, mm-hmm. and I collected money, but not to join.
Now, and so you were Deb's supporter, and you were Deb's supporter, though.
All of them.
And what, were you able to vote?
No, this is another thing. I didn't want to get... You talk about being an anarchist. I wanted to be a citizen of the world. What do you mean? An international citizen. The fact is that when the revolution broke out in Russia, I bought a trunk. I was ready to go to Russia, and I wasn't a citizen. That was in 1922, when they were planted machines. It was already later, after the revolution,
uh-huh.
you know. We bought shares.
Yeah, I've read about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had shares.
And so that's when you thought about going there?
Yeah. Well, I gave a thought of that. I was supposing it wouldn't work. Anyway, 1920, I applied for citizen papers.
Mm.
But I had a time in my life. They wouldn't give me this bill because they looked up my records. I was business agent. I went to Labor College. And they turned me down about three times. Finally, I went there and I said, listen, gentlemen, I had a serious operation in 1927. I said, gentlemen, I want to be a good American citizen. And there was no question left. And I used my head in certain things. I wasn't altogether stupid. But anyways, to come back to the socialist movement, these young men, because they were growing, they impressed me. I don't know why, because I can never account for it. Why is it? One of the business agents was a socialist, and he took me to the executive board of the Socialist Party, one branch. And I said to the, because they liked me. I was active and I was likable. As rough as I was, I was rough and tough, so they liked me. He later became a doctor. I took his place as business agent, so-called. And I watched their proceedings, and I didn't like it. I didn't like their behavior, their conduct. I didn't like the way they conducted their affairs.
Can you put your finger on why?
On what?
On why you didn't like it? Do you remember?
I couldn't stand their voices. Peculiar, isn't it? I don't know what it was. I could not, for one thing, I'll say this, I did not understand their Jewish. See, I couldn't speak Jewish. Not well, anyways. I learned Jewish here.
And the meetings were all in Yiddish?
Yeah. I used to speak Jewish on Shabbos home. Also a funny kind of a Jewish. All mixed up with Hungarian and German. All of a sudden, I joined a branch, an English branch. I find myself in the Jewish branch. It was the Schneider, he came across in the advances. I'm going to show you something about him. I find myself in a Jewish branch. I says, who in the hell transferred me to this branch? I don't want to be a member here. Maybe he transferred me. I said, no, Schneid, I like you personally. He was a Luftwaffe. He was one fiery organizer. He was a very good fire setter. He put fire under the workers. He was one of the best to incite the workers to join the union, but to carry them constructively wasn't there. One thing leads into another. You were very close friends. He and his wife both, a marvelous person. About that. I joined the Socialist Party, and I remained. Not only did I remain, but see, our union was part and parcel of them. Look at the help they got during the strike. The newspaper, the Socialist paper. My sister, who was 13, 14 years old, stood on the corner selling newspapers.
This was the 1910 strike.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know what it was, but I became very active in the Socialist Party. When I left Chicago in 1938, the local was still affiliated with the Cook County Socialist Party.
Now, during that time, what kind of things were you reading in those before the 1915 strike? Do you remember who you were reading?
Oh, I got the books upstairs. Well, I used to read a lot of pamphlets, mm-hmm. and I still have. I'll show you about the anarchist movement. I got a lot of literature from the anarchist pamphlets that you haven't got.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Did you hear? Now, Voltairine de Cleyre was in Chicago. Did you hear her?
Who?
Voltairine de Cleyre.
Yes, but I don't remember name.
Uh-huh.
But the anarchists, those that were, the they call a Haymarket Ride, the bomb, and all that stuff. And I read all, but I got pamphlets on that.
Because you told me a story about when you were going to night school to learn English, how you got angry at the teacher because of what she said about Haymarket. So by 1912, you already knew all of this.
Well, I had common sense. I didn't know, but I couldn't conceive of it. You know, I used to look up to a school teacher. But she would take the word of a policeman. Who the hell is a policeman? That takes a king, a governor, or somebody is worth to take it. My mother had a friend, a policeman, and the policeman told her. So I wrapped up and I only heard myself, of course. I'll show you my writing from that day.
Good.
I think I got some of it here.
Okay, well, maybe one time we can sit down and look, because maybe there's a way to organize it for books, Sarah.
Yeah, that's what I aiming for, hoping for.
See, because I think that with the sense I get from the tapes, and if we go through all the papers, I think there would be a way to do it.
Yeah.
I think it'd be after reading.
Roche Schneiderman, Agnes Nestor. You see, the others were what they call they were rich people. And they had some kind of finest, Alan Gates Starr, and Jane Addams. I met them all in my days, you know. They were refined people, a different type. And these people, see, I never got to that stage. Not that I want to, I'm not looking for no compliments. I want you to know that I'm as rough as you could see me. And I say at this age, I never want to be different. I said when I was business agent, I don't want to go. I was invited to have lunch with him. I said, no, I'm just human. And psychologically, you take on their race. I didn't want it. And these people, I knew, and I didn't want to associate with them because of that. They had to have their gloves. And the etiquette, and I'll tell you a story from Brimore College, you can die laughing from that. I mean, that was funny in a way. I remained a real proletarian all my life. I remained that way. Whatever little I have, financially is by sheer accident. I'm jumping from one thing to another, so you know my insight.
Mm-hmm.
So you know my background, why I want this. I would like to have it for people that will follow me, to know that such a people did exist, that not everybody is rotten. I cried all night when I made $2,000 on a piece of property. Why, my God, I worked for 30 years, I could have saved $1,000. And here I made $2,000, I didn't lift a finger. I still get goosebumps. I cried all night. And it was sheer accident. Just next one. I paid down $100 because I wanted to have a home. You see that I've never changed. And I wasn't taught, this wasn't taught to me by my parents. It was Hillman, Frank Rosenblum, Sam Levine. They inculcated it. And that remained with me. See, I haven't changed. They changed. Go ahead. I don't want to talk too much.
Well, Sarah, since it's May Day, I want to start with 1915 and go through. I've got a lot of things. But maybe since it's May Day,
yeah. You
could talk a little bit about when did May Day first become important to you?
Important to me. Mm-hmm. 1911. I went marching. I went marching in the coding center. I didn't know where it was. You see, but I went holding the placard, join the union, join the union. May Day, my God, what a holiday it was. So I gave a May Day speech in Brookwood. I've got it written down to you. All those things I have at hand, you know, and there's teacher that I was telling you about, that wrote a book on my misspelling. I'll show you some of her correspondence. I mean, all that stuff that means something, I can talk about it and write about it if I can develop it properly, intelligently. I mean, I can't do it myself. It's impossible. I got a typewriter, I got a tape recorder, but I can't even use it properly. I was in school. I had to give in my sermon. I'd stay up to 4 o'clock with one finger on the typewriter because my handwriting wasn't legible. And then when they got through with it, they couldn't, it was the correction, I wasn't able to read it after that. But when I read it to them, they cried. I mean, it had sense, it had meaning. The aroma of bread to the child. And I was hungry, and I described that with the same English teacher, an Englishman. All right, I'm scared.
So that 1910, that's when they marched through with the unorganized workers?
Yes, in the unorganized district. And besides that, it gave me, as an individual, the month of May. I could be depressed all week or all year, and that sort of brought new life into me. It rejuvenated me. I got up this morning, upstairs I scribbled, but here I thought as long as I'm down here waiting for him, maybe I'll make a few notes. I was going to... It has a meaning for me today. What is the International Labor Holiday? It meant so much to me and it still does. Where is it? I'd like to go to the meeting. I can't. It's nighttime. I never miss a May Day celebration. After that, it meant something. And you go ahead and ask me for something that you can use.
Now, So it was after the 1915 strike that you really became more involved in the union itself.
Yes.
Now, there was something called this Girls Civic and Educational Club.
Yeah, that was at the Hull House.
And that was started by the Hull House women?
Yeah, well, it was, a girl that worked in the union office. I forgot her name. I don't remember names. And she was connected with the Hull House and Jane Addams and all that. We had lectures there on civics, on hygiene. I remember the slide they used to show before they had the moving pictures. It was quite a... I used to attend.
Was the idea to try and develop women leaders for the union?
That was originally the idea. But you see, as soon as a woman made an attempt, they knocked her down. Either they screwed her up, what's the use? She'll get married and that's all. I'll talk about that later on, mm-hmm. What a woman had to go through. I had a woman here Sunday. She fell in on me. I had company, my family, they visit me, they want to see how I'm getting on. My grandnephew, my great nephew, they all come to see Auntie Sarah. And this woman happened to walk in on me. I worked with her in 1926. She's of Polish extraction. And I pumped her because she was reluctant to join the women's local. She belonged to 39, and I appealed to all the women. We were divided in crafts, pants makers, vest makers, coat makers. I was a coat maker, so I naturally appealed to the women's coat makers.
Now that was Local 39?
Local 39, that was the largest local. Then they had Lithuanian local, Italian local, Polish local. Well, we took some from all the locals. The worst, I sometimes think that I was made out of iron to withstood. But not falling into their trap, because most of them did. One case, they tried to frame me up. So I came to the manager, and this happened to be in there. I said, "You son of a bitch, you think I'm Becky? You're going to use me?" Just like... I shouldn't mention her. She was a decent girl. She was a nice girl. But he used her all. She was good. And then he threw her away. She didn't want to join our local, you see. She was an intelligent girl. But she fell. You see, he was an attractive man. A beast. And they're all there now.
Now that comes up in this book by this Hasanovitz. That comes up over and over again. She would quit. She'd work at a place for 2 days because the foreman would get her away in a corner and try and seduce her. Or the boss would come in. And so she'd quit. She'd go to another place. The same thing would happen.
You see, I didn't do that. No, I fought it out. No, I picked up the scissors. I said, I'll run it 3 hours. No, I had the advantage, the physical advantage. I suppose she was never home.
Well, she would just run away crying.
No. I resented this crying.
Mm-hmm.
No, I cried when nobody saw me. I would cry like the 1915 strike. He told me, "Sorry, you're crying over to see it. You regret it all your life." No, I didn't regret it. I never regretted it. But the fact is, he was right. That I did cry, I was sick, but I'm satisfied with what I did.
That was really a decisive turning point for you when you walked out of that shop, wasn't it?
Well, it was before that. Mm-hmm. It was before that, because I began to realize what the economic struggle is, the workers' plight. I saw that a little bit before. See, up to that time I was very, up to 1920 I still held on to religion. I worked at events, but I was still fasting, and you keep her and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever he asked me, for instance, to go out on Yom Kippur, he'll take me to show, he'll take me to this, that.
Well, Sarah, when did you join Local 39?
In 1910. That was 197. See, then they changed the local.
Oh, when it was under United Garment Workers.
Yeah. Then, you see, then I left. I rejoined in 1915.
After the strike, then?
Yeah.
So when you rejoined, it was in Local 39?
It was still 197. That was the amalgamated.
It was right before the break? No, 1915 was after the break already.
After the break. 1914 was the
break.
Yeah.
Oh, but they still kept the number.
Yeah. 197 was more or less a Jewish local, sort of. But then they gave up the Local 39. I was a member of 39 from 1916.
Now, after the general strike, you went back to work at Hart, Schechter and Mark. Where did you work after the general strike? After the 1915 strike?
Hart, Schechter and Mark.
And were you a chair lady there? But that wasn't until later.
That wasn't until later. I became chair lady in 1918.
So, in 1915, you went back to work at Hart, Schechter & Marx.
Yeah, I couldn't get a job. I was really... this time I knew where I was at. I went back there, you see, and when the strike, I couldn't work there because, as I said, I didn't agree with my leadership.
Oh, about those non-union clothes?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You see, I couldn't take it. Then, you see, I used to go... I was... If you call it anarchist, all right, I don't know what you call it, but I didn't listen. I wasn't a yes man to nobody. I used to go into non-union shop without orders from the union. On my own. I went in one place one morning, and I met Martin Peter. He came across him, and he's a good guy. And I fought him. I fought him all, but I thought they were wrong. And I say nine times out of ten, I was right, and they were right one out of ten. But as a whole, in comparison, I take it as a whole. He was a very good dresser, luxe, Italian. He was always like taken out of a box. He was working in Jackson Boulevard, I think it was. And I was going up to a non-union shop. It bothered me. Why does he walk on? He says, "Where are you going, sir?" I said, "I'm going up to Scotch Rooms." I remember the name. "I'm going up to see what those armor bases are doing." He said, "What?" I said, "Then why the hell don't you do something? What are you walking around here?" You know, if you, the average member would have been kicked in the pants. They kicked me one place, I'd go up another. I wasn't so easy to be kicked around. They kicked me plenty for what I was doing. So, what else do you want to know?
So while you were working at Hart, Schechter & Marx, you would quit and go to these non-union places?
I would take off.
Mm-hmm.
I would take off.
For how long at a time?
Nothing for a day or so.
Oh.
I just, I told you what I used to do. Or sometimes if it's slow, it's the slack and hatch of my marks. If it's slack, I'd go up the first week wise. I told you, I wasn't the worst looking girl either, and they'd make overages. But that didn't work with me. Not that I didn't have any feelings or I didn't, that I deprived myself of, but I tried to stay clear